Welcome everybody to the Cave of Solitude. This is episode 200. We are coming to you live for the first time on Facebook. Now, usually when you tune into this podcast, we're talking about comics and talking to my friends who make comics or just my friends who we love, you know, fandom and all that sort of thing. But every now and then I venture off into a different realm, the other creative realm that I'm a part of. And those of you who know me know that I'm a big hip-hop fan. And last year, me and my best friend from way back in the days made an album together. So tonight for episode 200, I wanted to switch it up a little bit and hopefully in the future do a couple more episodes yearly like this where we focus on different aspects of the arts. So tonight for episode 200, I'm very happy to have with us live from Cincinnati, Ohio, representing everybody's hip-hop label, producer extraordinaire, Mr. MC Till. Till, thank you for coming on to the show. I appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
And, of course, how could we celebrate and talk about hip-hop without having T-Dot's finest himself, Mr. H-A-Z, a.k.a. Dane Hall, the better half of High Society. Dane, thank you for being here with us, man.
Peace. Thank you for having me, man.
This is good, and I think this is a good energy that we have to have too, because I mean it's historical times we're living in, and I didn't plan on Blackout Tuesday to be the day for us to be having this type of a conversation, but it seems fitting, and the three of us I think can all agree that when you really understand and appreciate the art of hip hop, what comes from it is unity and love. And I want us to focus on that tonight and be able to talk, have free-flowing conversation that hip-hop takes us to. So I think it would be fitting for us to start by saying, when did you fall in love with hip-hop? And either of you can take it wherever you want to go, and if you've got questions to segue, go for it. But when did you fall in love with hip-hop?
I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, go first.
I remember distinctively my uncle, a churchgoer, an avid churchgoer, dropping off a Slick Rick tape. I believe it was Hey Young World.
Fitting.
Right. And I remember that was sort of like my first introduction to hip hop. And I put the tape in and it took my mind to places where I've never been mentally. It was my first real introduction. In terms of when I fell in love with hip hop, I think the first artist for me, and I don't think I even mentioned this ever, was Heavy D. Heavy D. I remember I'm chilling in the corner with a cutie named Shootin', a girl named Cheryl says she's been around. And I remember how he rapped. And you know, him being of Jamaican descent and myself, I loved when he would throw in the reggae in there. And I think that was the first time I actually fell in love with hip-hop was through Heavy D.
That's awesome.
Heavy D. I can't tell you the year. Mm-hmm. But I could tell you it was Heavy D.
Till, how about dope. You?
Yeah, the first memories I have was we had a radio player in the house. It was like an alarm clock radio. It was the only thing that played music in the house. And I remember, or at least the only thing that I had access to, it was my parents. And I remember playing, my brother and I found this radio station. It was the university down the street. And for like an hour or two on every Wednesday or Thursday, they would play hip hop music. And we just stumbled upon it one night and we were just like engaged by it, totally like, what is this? And then my brother, who's 3 years older than me, he was, you know, it was just kind of a passing fad, like people were kind of doing it. And he was like, you know, hanging with his friends, making up little rap songs. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I was pretty young at this point, but the moment I really remember like, really coming to my own and saying, man, I really want to be involved in this. We had taken a trip up to Indianapolis from Indiana, and we stayed at my cousin's house. And my cousin had De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising. And I don't know why, I was just this type of kid, but I had tapes with me, you know, for the Walkman, for the ride. And I begged my cousin to, well, I didn't beg him, but I asked him to make me a copy of De La Soul's 3 Feet High and Rising. And he did it, but we had to go. So he made the tape, gave it to me. I listened to it all the way home, you know, weeks on end. And then I didn't even realize that he didn't have enough time to put side B on it. So I didn't even know there was another side to this incredible masterpiece. And so I went and got side B and was just like floored by it. But I remember listening to that album 3 Feet High and Rising and just thinking like, man, I want to do this. Like, I want to rap. You know, I want to make beats. I want to, you know. And so that was the first memory I have of like knowing that this was more than just a passing fad or something cool, but it was something that really took hold of me.
Mm, yeah. It's so funny how some of those, like the place where it starts, it's funny where the journey begins and where it ends off for you. Like for me, my first hip hop album was one that probably at the time people would clown me for, which was Mace, Harlem World. I was a big Bad Boy fan. Me and my cousin and our buddy Andrew, we went downtown one day when Puff Daddy was releasing Forever, and we have a whole like story about meeting Puff Daddy that day and being in the recording that they had in the studio there. But from there, I remember listening to that era of music, that Jiggy era. But on each of those albums, they would always feature people. And as money-oriented as those albums were, you had DMX featured on that album, or you had, you know, The Lox, or all these different places that hip-hop was branching off to. Before you know it, you're listening to Wyclef and the Cannabis remix without knowing where you started from. And that connective tissue to hip-hop within the music. And I think at that time, it was taking over MTV, and over here we have Much Music and the radio, so it was everywhere. You couldn't escape it. But for me, the moment where it really was cemented, like this was something special, was around 99, around the time I Am came out, the Nas album. I was 14, 15 years old. I didn't realize this wasn't the best Nas album. But the intro had the snippets throughout the other two albums, and I'm like, what is this? And it was around that time too, I remember seeing Dane Hall in the hallway at school freestyling. It was the first time I ever saw somebody freestyling off the top of their head. Now, I don't remember if it was good or whatnot, but I'm like, he's going, like this is happening. So I said to myself, I'm like, I'm gonna produce, I'm gonna be Puff Daddy, and he's gonna be Biggie. That was my original dream. And for a while, I tried making beats. I wasn't very good at it, but that was a moment where I said, this is special. There's something connective about this. You remember, I told you that. I said, I'm going to make beats for you. And
you still have some of those beats?
No, it was on an old computer. I didn't even know how to. I was just trying to mimic like Timbaland beats with sound effects and stuff like that. But yeah, it was that era. It was that era. Yeah. So when you guys think of hip hop beyond the music, because you know the music is rap music, but now you start to realize in your journey that it's cultural. There's more to it than just CDs, beats, and rhymes. What do you guys think of when hip hop comes to your mind now?
That's a great question. Well, you know, that's a
very good question.
You talked about, you know, the era in which you know, kind of came to hip hop. Like, for me, my favorite era in hip hop was right around the mid 90s, creeping up into 97, 98, maybe a little 99. Even though I prefer the music of the early 90s more, what I thought was so dope about that era is you had so much diversity in hip hop. So I think about that a lot, you know, that there's just a wealth of diversity within hip hop, you know, from, you know, just everything. There's all points of views, all different perspectives. And, you know, you don't really get that if you're a casual listener now, or if you just like turn on whatever you turn on to listen to music. But back then it was commonplace to hear like Diddy and then Mos Def and then KRS-One, then Nas, then the Ghetto Boys, then Too Short, and just all these different, you know, perspectives, you know, on life and points of view, I thought was really, really dope. So I think about that a lot when I think about hip hop and how I really appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. What about you, Dane?
For me, I could say what I really love about hip hop is how it shows up everywhere without you noticing it's showing up everywhere. You know, coming from a diverse city, a melting pot, Toronto, you get mixtures of pretty much everybody. And hip hop can be found in every pocket of society, whether you like it or not. And that's what I love about it, because it can be so rebellious. It could unite us. It can make fun of us in terms of like laughing at society. You know, you just watch an episode of Fresh Prince, you know, where he would wear his jacket, his what school did he go to again? Bel Air Academy jacket. Bel-Air. But he would wear it inside out. And that became a trend. And crisscross wearing their jeans backwards, and you know, TV shows that would change the theme of their intro to make it a little bit more hip hop oriented. And I'm talking about shows that you wouldn't think. So I just love that hip hop just showed up in every pocket of society. You ride the train, you see the graffiti. You watch a TV show like Living Single, you hear Queen Latifah rapping on the theme. You wear your clothing, you wear the hat to the back, you know, nodding your head on the train, just how it appears everywhere. And it's unapologetic. That's what I really love about hip hop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's dope. It has a, you know, a prophetic tradition, prophetic voice, you know. I think of artists like N.W.A. and Ice Cube and, you know, Public Enemy and, you know, so many folks that, you know, they know what's going on, you know. And if you just listen to them, you can, you know, almost predict what's going to happen next, you know. And so that prophetic voice is something that, you know, I don't think it's talked about enough these days. And it's very timely now with everything going on in our society. So yeah. I appreciate that, too.
Yeah. It's funny because when I think what sometimes gets lost, especially the one thing about today's music, I'm that old man now who criticizes today's music. I'll admit it. But I think the one thing that is lost that we had at our disposal was the way the music was structured allowed the MCs to be very expressive in details and references to things. Whereas now it's much more about a mood. It's much more about the music and filling the void to say things that match that music, which is fine. But what we had at our disposal was, like you said, Till, throughout whatever part of that era you were listening to, if you're listening to the NWA and West Coast era, or when, if you caught on a little bit later like I did, you had people being very descriptive in what they wanted to tell you about. So you would hear historical references, you would hear them give you the news about what happened in their neighborhood, and then when you look at the history of hip-hop and you take it a little bit more beneath the surface, tells you a lot about Black history and Black culture and why it existed, because it was the original protest music. In New York City, it came from people making peace over beefs on blocks. That's where breakdancing comes from. So you get this whole appreciation of what this music that is, it's such a dichotomy of war and peace all at the same time, bravado and breaking down your ego all at once, but it was resolving problems it was that original peaceful protest, but that was very loud and in your face. It didn't feel like it, you know? And the more I listened to hip hop and tuned into what MCs were saying, as much as I loved the cockiness and narcissism of a Biggie or a Jay-Z or even a Tupac, that next song, you can hear their fear, their pain. So if you really listen, you're like, this guy's bragging because he's really insecure. And I feel like it taught you a lot about psychology, which I think sometimes got lost in what was being put out there in, I guess, pop culture on how they treated hip-hop. But I think hip-hop is the ultimate unifier for me when I think about it.
And to piggyback off of that, I think you bring up a really prevalent point. And I look at somebody like DMX, who's probably the most like one of the most hardcore artists that you can listen to.
You know.
But he's so vulnerable. You know. Yeah. But he's so vulnerable at the same time. And you know, I find myself appreciating him a lot more these days because, you know, there's not too many exes around anymore where they can give you that in your face, raw, uncut, unapologetic, but then be so vulnerable, you know, and make you feel what he feels. I really appreciate that about X. So that whole dichotomy thing you were talking about, I think X is a great example of just that.
Yeah, and you felt it. Like, he talked to the devil on one song and then had a song where he was praying to God, and you would think to yourself, that can't be. You know, it's either one or the other. That's how a lot of times we're raised in life, and we don't realize that the contradiction is a part of the... Like, we used to argue about this all the time, Dan. It's like, Nas said in this song, you can't have one or two chains, you need three of them, but he's on the cover of his album with 10 chains. What's he talking about? He ain't real, right? But that's part of the beauty of it all. Is identifying that contradiction and embracing it in a way.
Yeah.
Sorry, Till, I cut you off. Go ahead, bro.
No, you're good. I think of artists today. I mean, there's never going to be another DMX, of course. But I think of artists today that carry that same tradition of, you know, being very, very thoughtful and bringing the listener in. Like, I think of like Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole, Joey Badass, to name a few, even Vic Mensa. Dope. So I don't know why. Like, I feel like that tradition has been carried on, and there's artists out there, and not just underground artists, but there's like, you know, these guys are some of the biggest artists out there. But it just, I don't know. I don't know why we talk as if, you know, that element of hip hop has somehow gone underground or something. So I'd love to know what y'all think about that, because I think these artists are carrying on that tradition, you know, of a Tupac.
Well,
you know, or a DMX. Different, but in the same vein, you know
what? I'm going to throw Jay-Z in there because 444 is career. You know, You Must Love Me and, you know, Everything or Anything, really showing a different side of Jay. You know, a lot of people just look at him as, for most of his career, Big Pimpin', Money Cash Hoes, but... You know, he his first album was very vulnerable, very real. Y'all didn't appreciate it till the second one came out, you know, so he told us that. So he had to do what he had to do. But yeah, if you look at an album like 444, he's talking about infidelity. He's talking about his mother's sexuality. He's talking about black culture. He's talking about, you know, building family structure. Economic value. So I thought one that he made would have been that personal, considering he's made so many.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great example. I'm just throwing his name out there. He's the most recognizable artist. So, you know.
Yeah, oftentimes people don't recognize that about him either, right? They're quick to refer to those aspects of his career, the commercialized side. You're right, Till. There are people carrying on that tradition. It can't be ignored. I think the difference is that what we had on the front line, like, think of 1998, 99. I go back to that year because hip-hop dominated music. But the biggest radio hit that was overplayed that we kind of got, it was the song that maybe we got sick of because it was overplayed, was Lauryn Hill, Doo-Wop. That thing. You listen to that song now, and it's so conscious, and it's still so relevant. That was on the radio. Like, you don't hear things like that on the radio. And then after that song, you would have had a Hard Knock Life, which was a commercial song at the time. Ah, kids singing on it, that's too poppy. But listen to what he's saying, what he's representing, whose voice is being heard. That's not something we get so much now. Now, that stuff that you mentioned does exist, but the people, a lot of people today clown on Kendrick as though he's not great. They throw him in a trash heap sometimes, and they go, he's not as good as Corrupt. And it's like, okay, I get it, Corrupt's dope, but Kendrick Lamar is incredible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you know, yes, I did. There's no but here. Yes, I get what you're saying. I think a huge difference is today we have, you know, social media that we didn't have back then. So, you have the greatest MC in the world spits the most super lyrical stuff. And people are like, he's garbage. He's this, he's that, the other, you know. So there's lots of people. But in some ways, I feel like hip hop is definitely like outgrown.
Yes.
Outgrown the radio, outgrown the singles. Because you think of like Jay-Z and the positions that he finds himself in now. Think about like, you know, they're writing like, was it Bat? Not Bad Boy. Outkast, Big Boy.
Yeah.
Was into working on a ballet in Atlanta. That's so. I think hip hop has outgrown those traditional mediums. You know, and like I think about like Childish Gambino with This Is America.
Right.
I don't know if they played it on the radio. I kind of stopped listening to the radio because I just think it's just for me there. But I mean, everyone was talking about that. So that was on the Today Show this morning, America. I think everyone was talking about that. You know,
definitely.
In some ways, those artists that have those socially relevant, you know, songs and videos and content, they've outgrown those old systems, you know. Which is good, I think.
No, you're right. You're right. I think there's a disposability of the music now more than before. But then when you do find things, everything is available. There's so much to find.
Like
for myself, I was late to the show, but last week for the first time I listened to the Blue and Exile album from 2007. And that was one of the best albums I've heard in a decade. It was
you had a good time, I'm sure.
It was great. It was a great album. It's right up my alley of my musical senses now. So you're right. There's plenty out there. I think just the youth, what they get now is more that hype up wave music, where our hype up wave music, you might have lost your Timbs to it with MOP, right? There was something about it that you learned a lesson when you listen to that.
Timbs, you might lose your life.
Yeah. So people often think of hip hop as negative, you know, misogynistic, degrading to women, self-destructive, and a celebration of the ills in society. You know, you see, look at them, they're just like how they describe it. What do you guys say to that when people focus on that negative stigma of what hip-hop seemed to become famous on?
Not much anymore, to be honest, you know. I think hip hop took, you know, what you said is true. Like, it's all of that. Hip hop embraces humanity, you know, in its fullest, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it. And it puts it up there on a platter for you. And I think that's one reason why, you know, it has been demonized and hated so much, is because it reflects not just, you know, the best in us, but it also can reflect the worst in us. And nobody wants to come to grips with that. You know, it challenges us. So I guess I would say that.
Yeah, that's fair. Dan, what about you? Do people use it as a weapon against culture?
I think it's desperation on their part. And it's just looking for an easy scapegoat, a little loophole. And what better than to blame it on hip hop, right? It's so unapologetic. It's so brash. It's so in your face. But so is Tupac, right? And Tupac had a lot of positive messages. Comet, KRS-One, Public Enemy, even Ice Cube, you know? So I think people just want to handpick whatever narrative they want to run with. Guys are violent. The world is violent at times, you know, and there's also love, you know. And you see that dichotomy throughout hip-hop. You know, Ice Cube made a double album, was it Peace and War or something like that, the double disc. So it's all of those things, you know. Positive, back, can I borrow a dollar, like let's take that title, for instance, like the vulnerability behind that. Can I borrow a dollar? You know what I mean? Not give me a dollar. Can I borrow? Like, So the metaphor behind that too, it speaks clearly to hip hop. But I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't have it any other way because it's the most trend-setting, culture-shifting element that exists even today. Hip-hop culture.
Yeah. I find hip-hop...
And it also...
Yeah. Go ahead, Till.
It also, you know, it offers an environment to have conversations, you know, around... You know, we put people on pedestals. We put Tupac on a pedestal. We put founding fathers on pedestals. And, you know, people are not perfect angels. You know, they mess up. They do things that are not, you know, not right. You know, they have their failings and their challenges. And I think, you know, hip hop comes in and says, we embrace all of it. And, you know, let's have a conversation about it. Let's talk about it all. And, you know, as grown people, as a grown society, as a grown culture, that's how you grow. You know, you take it all in, you put it all on the table, and you deal with what's in front of you. And that's how you grow.
Yeah.
Word, you know?
That's one thing I love about looking back. I find myself, you know, singing along to songs where I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that this was what I would ride to school listening to. I would never say this to a lady. I would never do this sort of thing. And I never was that kid, but it's a reflection of growth, right? And it's a reflection of honesty. I find hip hop to be very comparable to comedy, where real comedians, even in the way that they make their jokes and work them out to an audience, they test it, they refine it, they tune it. It's like almost like fixing up every syllable in a bar. Where do I take a breath? At what point do I add a little word in order for that line to connect properly with the music and the beat and the audience? But it gives you an opportunity to be extremely honest and frightening. But, you know, science allows us to see the facts, but art is what we use to find truth. In comedy, there's always, we laugh because it's true, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it's offensive. And I think that's the key to hip hop. It's like, yeah, be offended by this, even if it makes you uncomfortable, let's talk about it. Or, yeah, you might be offended by us saying that about authority. Why? Why are people saying that about authority? Let's talk about that. Where other music allows that to happen, there's no questioning that. I'm not saying hip-hop is the only music, but because the way it's structured time-wise, you can say so much in a song. Like, you listen to Mos Def, Mr. N-Word, and you can do a classroom essay for a week on that, studying all of those things in society that exist. And I think hip-hop, and maybe country music, might be able to get into those things, but nothing's like hip-hop.
Yeah, true. Dave Chappelle's last stand-up series, like he was speaking to society. He was taking jabs. He was, you know, putting the mirror up at society and showing us how stupid we look sometimes. Like when you really break it down, right? And sometimes the only way you can accept it is through laughter.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I think that really speaks to what you're saying with comedy and hip hop. How well they mesh together. And I think that's why Dave Chappelle is so close to the hip hop community with Mos Def, Talib, you know, Kanye. He's very close for the very same reasons you spoke on. So I definitely see what you're saying.
Yeah, for sure.
What have you guys discovered about yourself because of hip hop?
That's a great question.
To be unapologetically me, that my voice can travel. As simple as I am or as simple as the next person is, you really can make a difference in somebody's life. I have a couple artists who I don't even know that well, might not even remember their names, but certain lines might stick with me for the rest of my life. And, you know, they might not be the household name artist. So as simple as we are as humans, our voice can travel. You know, our voice can really travel and we can really make a difference in in one another's lives. I think that's what hip-hop taught me, like, unapologetically, you know, that we have a voice and we should use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's dope. You know, I was watching this YouTube video of Alicia Keys playing New York, New York, or whatever the song is. I think Jay-Z, it's Jay-Z's song.
Yeah.
Empire State of Mind. Yes. So she's playing it, and like in between her playing it, they're showing different artists talking about New York. It was like a New York Strong thing, like, let's, you know, stay united against the sickness, COVID. Anyway, in it, they show some nurses listening to that song in a hospital, and they're just zoned out. They're dancing to it like they don't have a care in the world. And I thought about that as it related to a lot of the experiences I had. I was fortunate enough to do some tours. And on those tours, we just had so much fun with people. Like, most of the people had never heard our music before we showed up. Most of them didn't buy it. But while we were there, we would not just rap. We would put on skits. We put on like this little play and incorporated hip hop into it. And we would just have so much fun and so much laughter. And I think in those moments, I know for me and my buddy Wonder Brown, who was with me, and, you know, folks that showed up, a lot of us just kind of lost ourselves in that experience. And so one of the things that hip hop taught me in that experience was that, you know, I am able to go places and create experiences for people that are healing experiences, that are, you know, comforting experiences, fun experiences, to where people lose themselves for a minute. So they're not thinking about COVID-19 anymore. And they're not thinking about, you know, the parent they just lost, or not thinking about whatever it is, but they're having a moment where they're being, you know, filled with something wholesome and fun and positive. And I like to think that, you know, that's not just for that one moment, but that, you know, kind of carries on a little bit, helps improve, you know, people's life just a tad bit. And to be able to have those experiences was, you know, just really, really amazing.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say, too, the way, from my point of view, the way both of you gentlemen engage with hip hop and the hip hop community, like on the underground hip hop page, you guys do it from a place of community and sharing and spreading love. Some people like to battle it out. Some people like to one up you and challenge your every opinion, like, you're wrong. And you guys do it from a place of like, what do you like? What are you feeling? What do you know? And that was the thing I loved about hip hop, was that experience that I was able to share with Dane growing up. Like, we became like soul brothers, and people were like, all you guys ever talk about is hip hop. But it was, there was like a Morse code or a special language that we were able to understand the world because we shared this thing. Like, even to this day, we, you know, we'll send a text and, you know, a little lyric from a song, or we always do the outro.
Emojis even.
Yeah. or even like the, I don't know, Till, if you remember the Asiatic album from AZ.
Okay.
Fan mail where he has like the ruffled paper, and it was like their little signal to understand. Like, me and Dane used to do that in school. We knew the reference, right? But it was like this way to communicate, and sometimes songs that he would listen to would tell me something about him that he may not have really wanted to be open about, but I understood. I'm like, I see what you're feeling by that song that you like. Or I would listen to music and I would hear something and be like, this is going to speak to him, even though I didn't know exactly why. But there was an understanding that I felt no one quite understands him in certain ways like I do, and vice versa, because of that understanding of the music, as silly as that might seem. And I felt like hip hop made me become, it makes me maybe become a critical thinker, where like I had to analyze lyrics and find what was being said within it, what the connecting tissue was. And I do that all the time now with the world. Like, I don't take nothing at face value, because I'm like, no, they're saying something else, because when that guy said that, he really meant this, but it made it sound like he meant that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it just made me look at the world in a different way because of zoning into the music beyond the beat.
I feel that, and I kind of feel similarly with the music itself, like mm-hmm. not the lyrics, because I've always approached the music just as it sounds, not particularly what an artist is specifically talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm always thinking like, you know, almost like jazz, like hearing things, like I'm hearing cars go by right now outside, and like that's a sound. How could that sound be worked into a song?
Right.
And right. everywhere I go, like almost everywhere I go, if I'm walking, you know, taking a hike somewhere in the city, I'm always thinking like, what would be the sound, you know, for this experience? You know, what would be the song? What would be the beat? Would it be a break beat? You know, would it be a piano sample?
Yeah, yeah.
Would it be a vocal sample? And so that, you know, that kind of, it's the artistic side, you know, there's this math and all of that, the understanding the world. You alluded to this earlier, Eric, but then there's also that emotional side to life, the 100%. Artistic side to life, you know, and you can feel through music, you know, it helps bring your feelings out a little bit.
I think that's a more mature view of, like, I think I got to that point a little bit later in my listening experience and embracing of the culture. Is that after a while, things that maybe I'm like, ah, they're not as lyrical as this and this. So, but I started to appreciate the music, the musicality of it. I said, this guy is way better than this guy who's, you know, loquacious and uses big words and is super dope lyrically. But the music and the marriage of what he's saying is doing more. Like Q-Tip can do more than, for me, than, you know, a Cannabis, for instance. Even though Cannabis will break down the periodic table of elements, which is super dope, but Q-Tip might make me, like, sit and be like, yeah, Q-Tip will make me just be like, yeah, wrap it in a blanket and thank it. You know, the rhythm, it's just that moment where you just appreciate something so subtle. And it's like, that's the anthem to life right there. But yeah, I think that's a more mature graduation to the music.
You've talked about this a lot on different posts, and that, like, you know, there's more to a MC than just the exact words that they spit. You know, I've seen several posts from you along that those lines.
Yeah, that's something that's really dear to me, because as a artist myself, as an MC, I always look for ways to connect with an audience. And I'm past that stage in life where I need to be wowed by lyricism, as people would refer to it. I need to feel you. If I can't feel you, I can't hear you. So, you know, as Eric said, you know, Cannabis can break down the periodic table of elements. But can he say do that, do that, do do that, that, that?
You know, exactly.
And it takes a certain kind of musical IQ to take that risk, but know it's gonna work.
Yeah.
So that's why I find myself gravitating to the most defs, the Q-Tips, the Andre 3000s, the artists that are not afraid to take certain risks, take extra breath control, leave a pause here, purposely not be super lyrical on certain tracks.
Right.
Because it sticks with you longer. And I find Kendrick to be another example of that too. He'll do whatever needs to be done to convey that message. Yelling, changing his octave, changing the beat midway, ad-libs, not using ad-libs, the beat, even like the album art. Like, if you notice, To Pimp a Butterfly is so prevalent right now. You know, it speaks out. I hated the album cover, damn. But now it's become almost like a legendary with the, I don't know why his body was contorted like that, but his neck had this weird tilt. I don't know. It still bothers me, but it has now become almost a special moment just by looking at that album cover. And it's a certain art that comes with it. You have to be able to see it and say, you know what? This is it. This is the verse. This is the album title. This is what's going to work in the video. This is the new move. So I agree.
Yeah, there's
that to say I agree.
And there's times, like all the folks that you mentioned, like they can play around with the beat. They kind of jump around. They can make their voice sound like another instrument along the beat. And then there's times where an artist doesn't do that. It doesn't seem like they're all that dope at all, but you still love it. And case in point, one of my favorite albums of all time is Living Proof by Group Home. And I just, I love that album. And people say that, you know, the rap, they were whack. The rapping on there wasn't any good, but I don't know. To me, it was Group Home. It was two guys that were apparently living in a group home at the time. And you just heard their rawness, you know, in their lyrics and in their presentation. It just, I don't know. It's rules, man. Like when you put rules on music, it never works, because there's going to be a song or an album that comes along that doesn't go by any of the rules. You're like, I love this. And you can't really explain it, you know? So that's something I've learned over the years that hip hop has taught me. Like, rules and art statement don't mix well.
Yeah.
That's a true statement, because like I everyone that knows me knows Muddy Waters is my favorite album, period. Redman. I love Nas, Illmatic. I love Jay-Z, Blueprint. I love, you know, Big Pun, Capital Punishment. But my top five, one of my top five albums is Warren G, Regulator. And I'm telling you, the lyrics, if you're looking for lyricism, don't go there. You're not going to find lyricism there. Like he spells next wrong on the album. So there's... He spells next wrong on the album, but there's something about that album that I was just drawn to, and I'm still drawn to, and it has nothing to do with lyricism. It's just about evoking an emotion, a feeling, you know, that smooth flow, that West Coast bounce. It worked, and it's still my top five favorite album. So I find myself not even liking heavy lyricism these days anyway. It's not a lifestyle thing for me anymore. I need something that's a theme to my life, you know? So I think that's kind of why even How I Got Over is my favorite Roots album, because it's very relaxed, easily digestible. And it's my favorite jean to wear every day, type, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah. I like that the lyricism that has a complexity, but it sounds very simple. I don't want complex lyricism for complex lyricism's sake. Like, I feel like Fonte is a perfect example of that, where he really packs a punch, and it's put together, but there's, you know, I got your head still bobbing, but the verse didn't rhyme. Like, forget about it.
Yeah, throw pens.
Yeah, forget about it. When you can do that, pens. That's masterful.
Indeed.
Going back to the covers, what's a cover that comes to mind as like the greatest hip hop cover for you that just is, man, when I think of hip hop, that's the cover right there that perfectly personifies that album. Can't judge a book by its cover, but in hip hop, when the album cover wasn't good, we remembered it. Like, Mos Def could have put a booklet in one of those albums.
I would say two come to mind. I'd have to think hours and hours on this, and I probably will tonight when we get off. But two that come to mind, To Pimp a Butterfly. I just think that, I know you talked about it, Has, and you've been posting. I just think that's one of the best album covers of all time. It speaks so much. And the other one is Low End Theory by A Tribe Called Quest, because I feel like that one is a dope cover, but it also, I think, kind of represents the music in that it's stripped down. So it's a woman. You don't know exactly who the woman is. It does not appear she has clothes on. It looks like she's just, you know, has paint on her. And the music is kind of stripped down like that. And I don't know. When I see that cover and listen to the music together, it just feels right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. There's some albums that when the album cover doesn't match the music, it'll throw you off. What were you going to say, Has? Did you have a pick? I know you said To Pimp a Butterfly before. Is Has still with us? Did we lose him?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I'm here.
Yeah, I was just saying, what
your screen is a little frozen at times.
All right, we got the Teddy Riley going on. that poor guy can't catch a break, man. What are some of your favorite hip hop album covers, Dane? I know you said To Pimp a Butterfly. What else comes to mind for you?
I think by default, you know, Illmatic. Illmatic to me is like the most pure hip hop album. It's so New York. Illmatic. I can't even put the words to it. Illmatic. Just everything it represents. But also, this is gonna be weird. 808s and Heartbreaks. Kanye West. The plain white backdrop with the heart. I think it was like putty, made out of putty or something. Or I love the simplicity of that album, in terms of the album art and, you know, your emotions, your heart. It's something so real. Yet he used like a putty heart. And I thought that was very clever, because it's like throughout that album, his heart was being torn in pieces and conflicted, and it was almost treated like it was a toy. So having that heart on the cover kind of represented that, and I felt like it further excelled the music. Like, I love when an album cover matches the intensity of the music, and I felt like for Heartbreaks, 808s and Heartbreaks, I felt like that album art matched the music. And even the way he was dressing back then, he had the brooch with the broken heart. It just, everything around that time just really fit what that album was about.
Right.
Those are the two that I can think of for right now that really stand out to me. Yeah.
I would have to concur with what you guys mentioned. Low End Theory, To Pimp a Butterfly, it definitely evokes an emotion when you see it. Illmatic is, you know, that's it's perfection. But Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is a special one too, because it's the desk with the drawing on it, and it just really captures. And then within the album, there's those classroom skits that segue between the songs, which really make you appreciate things that can connect an album, even when, you know, one song may seem like it doesn't transition to the other one. Those little moments and the album cover, it perfectly evokes everything that you're going to get from that album. So that comes. There's something about the face, someone's face being on the front of an album, just them, that comes back, like Black on Both Sides. It's not a pleasant album cover, but it's everything you need to know about that album. I don't know if that makes sense. Says everything.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
He's just wearing the tank top. Like, there's nothing fancy, but it's so perfect about it. I don't know.
You know, speaking of album covers,
it's not done up. It's not. It's real.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What are you saying, Till?
Sorry, I was just going to also say... Oh, okay, I was just going to say Stakes is High as well. I really like that album cover.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one.
I really like that album cover.
So, I was just going to say, I really like what a lot of artists are doing right now. Like, I don't know who started it. Maybe Griselda. I see Griselda albums where they're showing, like, these older pictures of violence. Like, older paintings and stuff that depict violence. And I really appreciate that, because, you know, these older paintings that they're putting on their album covers are, you know, heralded as great art, fine art, high art, but they're depicting violence. And you know, if you listen to a Griselda album, there is a lot of violence in it. And so for me, it just speaks to, well, what makes one depiction of, you know, violence high art and another depiction of violence not, you know? Like, to me, Griselda's making some of the most beautiful music ever created. But a lot of people will listen to it and just be like, it's trash, it's just violent, they're talking about drugs, whatever. But, you know, it's depicting a reality, and it's depicting it in such, you know, a beautiful way, like some of this fine art that they put on their cover. So I like that duality of
There's the nuance, right? I think that's a perfect example of the nuance of something being so violent but then giving you the frame, like you look through this frame to this other side where you, it's not just glorifying it. Because sometimes I'll go back and I'll listen to music I really, really liked, and it made me feel, you know, it amped me. Like, I listened to Dipset back in the day. I love Dipset, but I can't listen to it now. I just can't. For some, it's still got the good, the fun vibe, but it's lacking the nuance that Freeway has. Not very far off the mark, but there's something about Freeway's delivery that's almost Griselda-like, where it's a lot of passion and a lot of desperation, and it's bravado and in your face and unapologetic, but you still feel that sense of, like, I gotta do this for my people, as opposed to just glorifying it. Like, I do this and I'm cool because of it, if that makes any sense.
Right. No doubt.
If you guys had to recommend a hip-hop album or song to encompass the beauty of hip-hop, what would you recommend to somebody? And it's tough because we all resonate. Some of us would be doggy style, and it's like, well, but it's a masterpiece, right? But what would it be for you?
I'm like, as the minute you said it, I knew exactly the artist. I'm trying to remember the. It's Mos Def, by the way, off his first album. I'm trying to remember. I don't. Hip Hop went from selling crack to smoke. In it, Medicine for Loneliness. I think it's called Hip Hop.
It's called Hip Hop. Yeah.
Is it called Hip Hop? I can't remember what it's called.
It's the first song, right?
Yeah.
Or second track. Yeah.
I think
that's like the perfect representation in my mind. It was so real, and it was expressive and energetic and, you know, animated and easy to digest and full of style. I think that would be it for me.
It's a good pick. That was one of the first the opening lines to that song, Hip Hop from Mos Def. I wrote it in my rhyme book when I was a kid as something to aspire to. Those first couple words that
you did.
Wrote. Yeah.
You did.
Yeah. It was something that I was like, that's what you want to write one day. Something like that, that good. That doesn't seem as complex as it is. Yeah. How about you, Till?
Man. So many. I think my first thought is I Used to Love Her by Common. I just think that's, you know, the musicality of it is dope, jazz influence, just the way it feels. Obviously, the story on it about hip-hop tells a story about hip-hop, so you kind of get an idea of the evolution of hip-hop a little bit. But if it was today, and it, like, no one, you never heard hip-hop before with everything going on, I might play This Is America by Childish Gambino, because it's so simple. Yeah, so profound, and you have to watch the video with it too. I think that's a good introduction into what, you know, how beautiful hip hop can be, and kind of putting a mirror up to, you know, society. So those are just two that jump out at me.
That's real.
Yeah, that's a good one. The complexity of the Childish Gambino song, it seems simple and catchy, but with the imagery and the changing of the beat, it's boggles my mind how people can come up with that. Absolutely. Definitely, I think of Mos Def a lot because of how many places he touches on that album. And as old as that album is now, 21 years old, it's so timely. Just the New World Water, or, you know, Got. This is how you get. I'm like, what does Got mean? I learned what it meant to get robbed, and what you do sometimes to bring it on to yourself. Like, you learn code from hip hop. You know, a song that every time it hits, that opening melody would be The Art of Storytelling from Outkast.
Yeah.
And how both artists just give you a day in the life. One person gives you a day in the life, and then Andre brings it all the way back home with that line, you know, I asked her what she wanted to be. She said alive. And the fact that you can do those things in one song and it's seamless, it kind of just shows you where hip hop can go, to a day in the life tale to something to really make you sit underneath the stars and think about like things cosmically, all in 3.5 minutes.
Word up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good picks, guys. It makes me want to make a mixtape about it. What? Okay, here's something controversial.
No doubt.
How are you guys doing for time? Everybody can keep going, or are you good?
Good.
You good?
Okay, I'm good.
Here's something controversial, and, you know, two of us in the room might have something to say about it, or shouldn't have anything to say about it. What do y'all think about white rappers?
I don't think anything. I don't have an issue with white rappers. They're white and they rap. I don't.
It wasn't a trick question.
No,
I really don't.
I really don't think anything of it. I don't like when artists sound like the I don't want to say nerd rap, but kind of like the nerd rap, where they're trying to break down every syllable and sound like they're lyrical.
Mm-hmm.
But there are black MCs that do that too, but I call it like the nerdy white rap. I don't gravitate towards that sound, but like, I think there's some dope white rappers. Like when I heard Joe Scudder with Little Brother, I thought he was dope. Like I thought he was pretty dope. I don't really have a problem with white rappers. Yeah, I don't. They rap. I tend to gravitate more towards black artists only because I feel like there's a certain soul in their music that I can gravitate towards. But yeah. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I agree. What about you, Joe?
Yeah, the way I think about it is, like, when I got married, my wife is not white. And, you know, I had to get to know her family, her side of the family. And even though they have accepted me, you know, as one of their own, I still feel like there's a level of respect that I need, you know, to honor, you know, that side of the family and be respectful and carry myself a certain way. I feel similarly with hip hop. Like, I feel like hip hop, in my experience, has always been a very welcoming environment, you know, for me, even though I didn't grow up, you know, in any type of hip hop culture. I'm from, you know, smaller town in Indiana. So like, it wasn't like everywhere, you know, you went, my family wasn't into it. But I feel like I've always been welcomed and accepted, but I still feel like there's a certain respect and a certain, you know, integrity of honoring and valuing, you know, something that was you were not born into. Like, this is not my original home that I was born into. So with that, I think there just comes a way that, you know, I try to carry myself to be respectful. And I guess for me, I'm a little bit more critical if I know someone is not of hip hop, but has come into it, you know, because appropriating other people's culture and art, you know, does happen. And I don't like it. So I think I'm a little more critical of people, and it's easier for me to be critical of white rappers because most white rappers tend to not come from, you know, hip hop communities, at least through my experience. So I don't hate on anybody. I just tend to have a little more critical eye when I see another white rapper, which is funny because I'm a white rapper, but I have a critical eye on myself. Like, I'm always like second guessing, sending stuff to, you know, friends like, hey, I'm about to put this out. Like, what do you think? Is there any nuances here I'm not catching, you know? So that's kind of how I come to it.
Yeah.
But you bring up a good point though. I just want to interject quickly because sometimes you don't know if the artist is white just by listening, you know? So that's why I responded in the manner in which I did, because there's a lot of artists whom I thought were black and they were white, and vice versa. So I think at the end of the day, for me, it's just what I'm hearing. When I listen to the music, is it a good representation of what this person is about? And are you honoring the genre, or are you just, you know, doing it just to do it, you know? But I feel that way, honestly, about some black artists too. I think for me, at least, they're held to the same standards. Especially, you know, yeah. you go.
Okay, I was just gonna say, I forget who said it, but it was some legend that was there when hip hop started, you know, in the Bronx, and he was saying, you know, I view everyone as a guest in hip hop after, you know, a certain era, like 92 or 82 or whatever. And so, like, I think about that too. It's like the originators, those that started hip hop out in the parks, in the Bronx, with the parties and all of that. Like, what do they have to say about this? You know, what do they have to say about white rappers? Because, you know, there wasn't really any white rappers in the Bronx, you know, at that time. You know, like, what do they have to say about who is or who isn't hip hop, who's welcome into hip hop, you know? And maybe it's out there, but I would love to see that, you know, consortium of early pioneers, you know, come together and be like, this is what we think, this is what we say. It's like, I think that would be pretty powerful. And maybe that has happened, I just don't know about it. But
yeah, I think when the documentaries and things that I've read when I do, like, my hip-hop research, you realize how intertwined hip-hop was with the disco and punk scene. That was very the cultural diversity to make hip-hop become what it was from the beginning was a little bit of everything. It told you the story of people that were stuck in certain parts of New York where they had destroyed their city and it was ravaged by, you know, blocks of gangs that needed to band together and what came out of that, the beauty that came out of that. But what made it bubble up, you know, Blondie was closely associated with, I don't know if it was Fab Five Freddy or Grandmaster Flash. Like, those things wouldn't have existed without that, the synergy between them. But for myself, I've told both of you guys this, but I'm hypocritically, I tend to not like white rappers for the most part because of the same thing that has said, right? It's that overcompensation sometimes to prove something. I mean, I did it myself where I could never, like, I always had to write verses like AZ, where it was just like, you know, you just wanted everything to be so perfect to the point where it's like you're trying too hard, that you're missing the soul of it. Not to say that AZ doesn't have soul, he has all the soul in the world, but I tried to make every part of it, like, it's got to be so good that no one can say that I'm whack, because you automatically are assumed in many ways that, here we go, here's another Eminem. He's only doing it because of Eminem, right? And I can't stand white rappers that sound like him.
Yeah.
He's him. That was the beauty of hip-hop, is that you could automatically, just by the little tenor of their voice, you didn't even have to hear the volume way up. You're like, I hear Jay, I hear Nas, there's the rasp, that's Eminem. Where then, now you hear certain people who are great rappers, great MCs, like an NF, you can see that he can do it, but I'm just like, he sounds like Eminem. Like, I'd just rather listen to the original version of that. And I never wanted to.
Yeah.
And a lot of MCs I know, they're very, very good, very skilled, but it's like, you're trying too hard, bro. Like,
yeah.
Give it up. You're trying to be so good that you're actually not good.
Yeah.
So it's finding that middle ground of still being able to capture the soul of the music, paying respects to it. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
I think M could have easily fallen into that category. I think, I'm a big Eminem fan. I think what worked with him was his subject matter, as deep or as stupid as it could be at times. When you listen to M, you were allowed to, I guess, filter and digest his music easier because you knew not everything was meant to be taken so seriously.
Right.
He can be in on the joke, you know. He wasn't afraid to be in on the joke. Right. But you can tell that he wrote feverishly, and he was all about the cadence and making everything match. But I think because of that dichotomy with, you know, being so precise with how he wrote, but then the subject matter being so loose, I think that allowed you to appreciate his music more. Whereas if you take an artist today that has the same mentality when writing music, if he's talking about deep, this is why I can't really mess with, what's his name? Joyner Lucas or Lucas Joyner Lucas, whatever. He gets too conceptual, and it always becomes about the topic and not about the enjoyment of the music. And I find that too many of today's white artists, I don't feel the soul. I don't hear the soul. It's just, I want to prove I can rap. Da 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 da. Dibba da ba da ba da ba da. Sibba da ba da ba da ba da. And it's like, cool. But where's the soul in it? That's why I can't feel most of it today.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, because like I was alluding to earlier, I really listen to music for the totality of it, the sound of it, not just if they're dope lyricists or not, but does the overall song or album sound good, you know? Yeah. Which speaks, I think, to the soul of it.
So who are, sorry, I'm taking like Eric's
questionnaire. No. You guys who are some, interject anytime you want.
Who are some dope white MCs?
Technically speaking, I think that, you know, R.A. the Rugged Man, Eminem, I think they're both really dope lyricists.
He's dope.
There are some R.A. the Rugged Man albums, like some songs on the albums I really like, but going back to what you were saying, Haz, it's like, I don't know. It's just something that just doesn't pull me in about a lot of his music. But it's dope. He's uncategorically dope. Same with Eminem. But I'm trying to think of like artists that are more like on the vein of like a Q-Tip or Common, that just have a good vibe about them. White rappers like that.
I will say this.
I don't know.
I'm not like, you know, vouching for him or anything, but Bubba Sparxxx, that Deliverance album, it was pretty decent.
It was good.
I don't even remember that album.
It was a good
I'm
album.
Not going to lie to you. That was a pretty decent album, Deliverance by the Bubba Sparxxx. That was pretty dope. Solid album.
It was a good album.
I actually really like Paul Wall when he raps over beats that I like. I think Paul Wall is dope.
Houston.
I can't think of many, to be quite honest with you. I other than Eminem, I don't know how many, you know, Evidence is dope from Dilated Peoples, but how much of him I've listened to, I can't really say. I don't know, man. Me and you, Till, we're the dopest. That's it.
Kaz Metta, he's dope. Just Me, Scribbling Idiots, they're dope. But they're more, even those guys, they're more a little tech. I'm just trying to think of cats that are like more fun. And
down like to earth.
Kid. And not saying that these guys aren't down to earth, but I'm just saying like, who's got that flow that's just like kind of on a vibe and not like more technical? That's white.
And I think that's what Eric is saying too. And I think it's true. I think because I think the mentality going into the music is like there has to be an overcompensation. Yeah. You know, I got to prove I can do this. And it's sort of like, and you know, to get into race a bit, it's kind of like the black experience in a new job. You know, you feel like you don't have very much room for error. You got to nail it. So I think like for white MCs, and I can't speak for white MCs because I'm not white, but you get what I'm saying. Like, I feel like they go into it trying to prove that they can rap. And it's rapping is one thing, but what's your musical IQ? That to me is what speaks volumes, your musical IQ. So I find that most of the white artists artists in hip hop thrive behind the boards, like Alchemist, Derringer,
Static Selecta.
I think There we go. Who did that Freeway album with him? That Freeway album.
Jake One. Excellent album.
You know what I'm saying? That dope album. I think that's where you kind of see them thrive a little more. You know?
Yeah.
I'm really going to be thinking about this now.
Yeah, no, when we get off of this, I'm going to be thinking about it.
Yeah.
There's got to be more than one. got to be more than one.
Oh, there's plenty, I'm sure.
There's plenty.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I try to do, because to match Dane's lyricism, but also to match that comfort and that oneness with the beat. So I never want to overdo it, but I want to be able to capture those moments where I can have a little bit of fun on it, because I don't want to be that type of MC or be blatantly like, you're trying too hard, bro. But yeah.
You know who's dope? I forget his... the dude, House of Pain dude.
Everlast.
I know he doesn't rap as much as he used to, but I think he's really dope and has a lot of soul and doesn't really overcompensate. So I would say he's one. And another... I forget how you say this guy's name. It's R-Y-U. But I don't know how you say R-Y-U. He came up like, you know, Divine Styler. He's... Divine Styler out of Los Angeles, I think. Anyway, look it up. RYU. He's pretty dope too. And I think he's white.
I hope you're right.
Speaking of white rappers. Brother Ali. Brother Ali white?
I would have thought he's albino. He's actually albino.
Was he born to white parents?
I don't think so.
Or black parents?
I think he's black.
I think albinos come from two black parents, I believe.
Oh, I thought anyone could be albino from any pigmentation.
I think he might be black. I haven't listened to him in a minute. I used to. I think he used the N-word. I think he might have had liberty to. So.
Well, okay. If he is white.
If memory serves, could be wrong.
Brother Ali on there.
Yeah.
Because he's dope.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Brother Ali is dope, for sure. What else, guys? What else is on your minds? I don't want to just control the entire narrative here. What else are you currently thinking about when it comes to hip-hop?
I kind of feel like I miss hip-hop the way I used to enjoy it. I'm trying so hard not to be that older uncle, that miserable dude that always complains. I'm trying so hard. I don't know if it's because of fatherhood and marriage and, you know, life coming at you at full speed as you get older. I just find myself, it's harder for me to get in the pocket of today's music. Like, I'm not up on everything the way I used to. When I want to enjoy music, I'm just putting Tribe Called Quest in my display on my phone, uploading Tribe Called Quest, and I just feel out of the loop with what's going on today to an extent. Like I really feel out of the loop. The last album that I really, you know, listened to front to back was the J Electronica album.
Yeah.
You know, I feel so out of the loop, and I don't know if it's just because of the musicality spectrum of it, or if it's because of, you know, culture shift. You know, we're getting older now. I know the music that I like is probably still out there, but I just feel out of place a bit. Like I kind of just go back to what I know.
Yeah,
that's where I feel.
I experienced that myself. I'm very nostalgic now when it comes to music. Because do you think it has something to do with a lot of the things, like our joint experience, was the music was related to a memory. We remember listening to an album of a certain type of year at your house, or something was happening that we associated with that album. Whereas when you just go through life and the routine of it, you're and also the way music is released, you know, there was that excitement of knowing it was coming out. Someone would get the CD, you'd borrow the CD. all of that aspect of it.
I'd buy the CD. Because you knew I was going to borrow it.
I'd buy the CD. You would burn the CD. But
I wasn't about to buy Shine.
Hey, that album's better than I remember it to be. It's actually pretty good. But Till, you stay up on the music steady. Like, what is it that keeps you inspired? I want to ask you that.
It's the music. I like it. I like the music. And I love how, you know, like, there's a bunch of music coming out now. Like, more now than ever before. Because it's so easy to get it out. So easy to record it. And so there's so much more music to consume. And I love how it's like, okay, I'll listen to 10 albums and be like, okay, you know, these five, they're pretty dope. These five are, you know, they're okay. But then you never know where that one is going to come from. That one album, you're like, man, I can't wait to go back to that again and again and again. And then there'll be like a little drought and be like, okay, these five are cool. This album's cool. I like this. But then that one hits you like, oh man, this is the one again. You go back to it. So I think it's kind of, you know, it's like the high. Like, you're always searching for that album that'll take you back.
Hey, I got a question for you, Till. I got a question for you, Till. Are you going to rate any album a 2 or less?
No. I have a policy. I don't talk about music that I don't like. It's just, life is too short. Okay. So if I hear an album, I'm not really feeling it. Like, it's not for me. So that's why anything under like a 3.5 usually doesn't get the time of day for a discussion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you have it, folk.
And I am a chronic 5 giver. I give out 5s way too much. I know this about myself.
No kidding. No kidding, Santa Claus.
But look, if you came out with a dope album between like 91, 2-ish to like 96-ish, it's probably getting a 5. I'm biased like that.
There were a lot of them there, though.
I have a lot of them.
Think about this. Beats, Rhymes, and Life was 4 mics. The standard that we grew up in, classic albums would get 3.5 albums. 3.5 mics, sorry.
Mics,
yeah. That was a regular occurrence. Albums today that when you listen back, okay, they're not perfect. Not every song on them, it's not necessarily a masterpiece, but they were classic albums where it brought you back to a time, brought you back to a year in high school. You remember listening to it in a, whatever it might be. You know, 50 Cent, Get Rich or Die Tryin' was not a perfect album, but that's a classic album. Like, we all experienced that together. And, you know, Reasonable Doubt got 4 mics. Like, it was nothing. Like, no one questioned it. It was just, yeah, this is really, really good. But, you know, there's a lot of really good albums out right now. So that's what we grew up in. Like, it was a wealth of excellence. And, yeah, it's fair. What would you guys say is your favorite era of hip-hop?
For me, the 90s.
Is there a timeline, like a window 95 to 2000?
Yeah, I'm trying to... I'm trying to really buckle down, but I'm thinking 96, 95, 96... I think 96. I'm not the best with timelines, but I just remember 96 being a great year. There are probably other years, of course, in the 90s. What's yours, Eric? It's probably whatever you say, it's mine. What a piggyback what you say.
No, I'm in the same, I think I'm in the same thing as you guys. Like, mine originally was 98, because that's when I got into hip-hop, and I remember that time at the store, you know, HMV and record stores, Music World, whatever it was that you had, Tower Records in the States. There was a wall for hip hop albums, and every week there was a new album that was coming out. It was like clockwork; you couldn't keep up with how good it was. So, you know, in 98, you had DMX, It's Dark and Hell Is Hot. You had Capital Punishment. You had I think Lauryn Hill, Volume 2, even things like Jermaine Dupri, Life in 1472, was just boom, 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 all coming out at the same time, and everything had something worth listening to. Now, that was just the commercial aspect of it that I was aware of. Then you had Black Star that had come out during that time, and it was just like, where do you begin and end? But 96, like, what's the best album of 96, really? You got Reasonable Doubt, you got It Was Written, you got The Score, you got All Eyes on Me, Muddy Waters.
That's Muddy Waters.
That's Stakes is High.
Stakes is High.
Beat Ill Death, Have a Life.
God.
Right? And I don't think any of those albums were given classic status at the time. Not one of those albums was recognized as a classic. But they're I think, some of the foundation that hip-hop will forever stand on is those particular albums. Yeah.
Sorry, were any Outkast albums released in 96?
Yeah,
ATLiens.
Yeah.
They're best, in my opinion.
Yeah, and in 98, Aquemini came out, right?
Yeah.
That was another, in 98, Aquemini came out. Like, again, like those two.
That was dope.
Yeah, it was crazy. 96 was special. I don't
know, between.
And everyone was still alive. I mean, other than Eazy-E, but you still had Biggie and Pac during 96.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say this. Eazy-E, is he good?
No.
Guys, is he good?
He wasn't even a rapper, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway,
he was a real gangster version of Puff Daddy. That's how I see him.
Okay, I'll give him that. I just feel like we give passes to so many. I'll just, you know, leave it at that. Eazy-E, nah. I'm sorry, man. I gotta be that guy. I just don't feel him. I just don't feel
good.
Him.
All right, let's wrap this up on the classic question. What's your top five MCs of all time? Let's end it on the one that everybody really wants to listen to.
The top five MCs that we think are the best or that are our favorite top five.
You know what? You tell me which one you want to do. That is a good way to put it.
I always like talking about my favorite.
Tell me your favorite.
I don't have to worry about like, oh, I gotta really think about this. Nah, don't worry about that. Is this MC actually better than this one?
Nah, who are your favorite? Tell me your favorite. That's all that matters. My favorites
would have to be Pasta Noose from De La Soul. It's probably in that number one spot. Love Pops. Common.
Yeah.
Is up there.
Yep. For me too.
Black Thought. Man, the last two, favorite MCs. There's just so many. But I'd probably have to say, it's hard. But probably Pharaoh Monch and Q-Tip would probably be my five favorite.
I like it.
But it'll change. It'll probably change tomorrow or in 10 minutes, you know?
As it should.
But those five are always up there hovering around. And Paz is always at the number one spot. Love Paz.
Yeah, it's like an unwritten rule in hip-hop for everything to be in five. Top five MCs, five
of course. Mics,
five, you know what I mean?
Of course.
But it should change. I think that your favorites should, you should have enough in that list that this guy goes here, and oh, maybe that guy. How about you, Haz?
Most Def.
Are these your favorites? Are these your favorites?
These are my favorites. Yeah. These are artists who I enjoy listening to and who have influenced me the most.
Gotcha.
Q-Tip, Most Def, J Electronica, and you know I've been on J Electronica for a minute, Eric.
Yes,
Jay-Z, of course, and Nas. Yeah. Did I say Common? If I didn't, he would be like a runner-up.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to get a runner-up before Eric goes, because to say Drez from Black Sheep. Love Drez.
From Black Sheep. I was wondering where.
I love Drez. So dope. How about you, Eric?
Now it feels complete for you.
Yes. As soon as we get off here, I'm going to be like, no, shoot. Let's start the Zoom back up again. I got one more.
Word.
My list is a mixture of both of y'all. Jay-Z and Nas are always at the top of my list forever. They're my two favorite artists. I love that they battled each other because they were my favorite before the battle. And it was always a debate for me after, you know, the legends died, Biggie and Pac. That they, in my head, I'm like, these guys are special before I fully understood it. So they're always a special place for me. Common, I really love Common. He's a type of MC I aspire to be because he's not afraid to be vulnerable and talk about love at no end, almost to a point where it's like, okay, like, you're going to hit us with a banger comment or are we going to keep talking about love? But as I get older, I like it more and more and more. He's definitely an MC I would love to be. Mos Def has put together some of the best works that I've listened to for me, again, as someone who I would love to emulate. And still maintain a level of soul in his music. That's four. I'm a diehard Biggie and Tupac fan. That was what made me fall in love with hip hop. Arguing about Biggie and Tupac. Me and Dane were on opposite ends of that. So Biggie's got to be there. That's five already. But
man, I forgot one. I'm sorry. I got to throw it in there because I'm gonna go away feeling real bad. I got to add this one.
Yeah.
So J Electronica comes out.
Yeah.
Andre 3000 goes in. Yeah. How could I forget?
Yeah, yeah, I'm mad. He's another guy who would be in there. You guys mentioned somebody. So you said Common, Q-Tip. You know who, for me, is Lupe Fiasco. I love Lupe Fiasco. I feel he is one of the most underrated MCs of all time. He doesn't get put in the list the way he should. That's a guy whose writing just comes with ease and clarity. And I'm just like, how did he put that together? Like, it was always there. And sometimes he's a little too complex and into the personification aspect of the theme. But I marvel at him.
Yeah, he's scary. Yeah, his talent is scary.
Yeah, he's, for me, he's another guy who I just could study and study and study. Those guys there. And a couple other guys you mentioned that I'm, you know, Andre, Black Thought is dope. I don't have as much of a connection to him as I do with Mos Def and Common. But yeah, that era of the OK Player, Ruckus guys are always somewhere special for me. AZ, you know what? I really love AZ.
Izzy's dope.
I got a very big soft spot for him, but yeah.
He's super dope.
I'm way past five now. Guys, this has been a real treat. I appreciate you giving me so much of your time and celebrating my 200th episode as a ode to hip hop in her essence, as Common would say, right? Her. So I appreciate that. What are you guys working on? Where can people follow you? What can we be looking out for? I know you guys are both busy in the creative aspects.
You could go, Till.
Okay, cool. A bunch going on with Everybody's Hip Hop Label. We do an interview show, the Boom Bap Chats, every Thursday night. So you can check that out. We also have an album coming out later this year. We're going to start releasing information about that soon. It's a little bit darker. I produced the whole thing, which is fun, but it's a little bit darker than what I'm used to. And we are growing our membership on Patreon. People, give us a dollar or two every month so we can keep on doing what we do. And in return, we're producing beat tapes every month. And so people get the beat tapes. And then we do a curated list. I need to get you on board so I can send you these curated lists, because we send out a curated list every month, and it has a list of hip hop albums we think are dope, so you don't have to filter through the thousands that are coming out. And so we're doing that, getting ready for our next book, the Boom Bap Review, which will come out later this year, highlighting some of those dope Boom Bap albums coming out this year. So just a few things we got going on.
Beautiful. Okay, Haz, please. What about you?
Well, I think we're working on something.
Yes, we are.
Are we not?
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so we're working on... I'll let you speak on what we're working on, because you can divulge into how much you want to divulge into.
It's the follow-up to Monday. It would have been out if not for the Ronas coming our way
and
ruining everything. But it's just about complete. We're going to put the finishing touches on it. It's going to be called In Pursuit Of, and dot, 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 you fill in the blank. And it's going to be darker. It's going to have some more serious content in a way where Monday had it as well, but this one will zero in a little bit on some more serious topics, still maintaining that boom bap, you know, sort of native tongue feel that we love and like to share with everybody. So once, you know, everything is opened up again and we can hit the studio, we're gonna finish that up and it'll be out hopefully by the fall. I really don't know when all of this nonsense is gonna end, but hopefully by the fall you're gonna have another High Society album. And on the low, me and Till are working on some music together. I've got a couple songs in the bag.
Dope.
I haven't been able to record everything that I have the skeleton versions of, but it's in the works, and I want to finish that. And, you know, Haz is definitely going to be on that heavily, like Jay was on the Jay Electronica album. So it'll be another High Society of some kind.
Right on.
That's what's up. What's up.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to episode 200.
Has have anything coming out? You working on anything?
I'm actually working on a project, which for now I'll...
Mum is the word?
Mum is the word for right now, just because I don't want to box myself in right now, but I'm working on something very small, like a small little... project. I've been keeping it, you know, very private. I don't even think Eric even knows, and I tell him everything.
And that's why I didn't ask, because I'm like, I know we're working on something, and I know he hasn't told me about no special project, so
I didn't need to ignore you.
I'm surprised. This is news to me.
I wanted to surprise him, actually. But since the cat's out the bag, I'm working on a very small project. It's going to be titled Hazmatic. With obviously reference to Illmatic. The cover will be, you know, kind of like what Elzai did. It's more like a small project, but it's going to be a real record. It's going to feel good. It's going to be vulnerable. It's going to be shortened to the point. Eric, I'm going to send you some ideas of what I got going on.
I'm sure they're incredible. That's good. You know what? The creative... It's important to share what we're doing creatively because it keeps everybody inspired, and inspiration is very vital to what we need right now. We need to be inspired, and the creative juices just re-energizes everybody and keeps us alive. So that's good.
Okay.
Well, thank you guys. I hope we do this more regularly. I think it'd be good for the hip hop groups that we're a part of. For all of our different followings that we've got, and it's just good for us, I think. So hope we do this again in the near future. Thank you for helping me bring in the 200th episode of my comic book podcast, but there's definitely a hip-hop slant to it, so I appreciate doing it with you guys who know the culture probably better than I do. So I appreciate that. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Be sure to follow everybody's hip-hop label, Haz, myself, and we will be back soon. Thank you for tuning in to the Facebook Live.
Peace, peace, peace.